Yeah, I love that. Everything that I learned from a construction perspective, especially building with Adobe and just like faster construction methods that use like a lot of the materials that are around. I love that.
Welcome to Behind the Stays, a podcast that shares the stories behind your favorite Airbnbs and the hosts who've made them memorable. Behind the Stays is brought to you by Spontaneous, a free weekly newsletter that brings you a carefully curated list of last-minute deals and upcoming steals on Airbnb. Sign up at spontaneous.com. I'm your host, Zach Buzicruz. Enjoy the show. Gabby and I spend a lot of time traveling, and we often get asked by family and friends how we go about staying healthy while on the road. Well, the secret sauce to staying healthy on the road? It's actually a juice. Keeping our bodies and minds nourished while on a plane, train, or automobile is essential to ensuring that the best last-minute deals on Airbnb keep getting delivered to your inbox each week. And that's why we love Happy Moose Juice, our one-stop shop for zero added sugar, immune-boosting super juices. Happy Moose Juice is like a HIIT workout for your immune system. Their cold-pressed juices and wellness shots use the freshest of the fresh fruits, vegetables, and herbs, all sustainably grown and hand-picked by family farmers. Each delicious morsel is picked at peak ripeness and then promptly pressed to ensure mind-blowing flavor. Happy Moose is like a cheat day for your brain and body. If you're not really a green juice person, just wait until you've tried Apple Bottom Greens or Charred Knock Life. You'll be feeling like a juiced-up Daddy Warbucks singing, "I don't like it, I love it," in no time. Staying healthy on the road can be hard, but Happy Moose makes it easy. Explore Happy Moose's collection of carefully crafted juices and wellness shots at www.happymoose.com. And you can get $15 off your first order when you use the discount code SPONSTANEOUS at purchase. Again, that's SPONSTANEOUS at purchase for $15 off your order. In just a moment, you'll meet Navid Safavash, the creator of Safa Farms, a boutique eco-hotel featuring a collection of cabins outside of Guadalajara, Mexico. Navid is a serial entrepreneur. He founded an agency that helped build products for companies like eBay, Comcast, and LinkedIn before eventually founding a company called Placeit, which was a design and mock-up tool for creatives. He eventually sold Placeit to Envato, the leading marketplace for creative assets. After spending several years building his various businesses, Navid wanted to work on a different kind of project. A project that felt a little bit more like play and less like work, and somehow conjoined hospitality with sustainability. Tune in to hear the impressive story of how Navid designed an adventurous farm escape in harmony with the environment and the ecosystem around it. All right, without further ado, get ready to meet Navid. All right, Navid, so if I were to crash a happy hour with some of your closest friends or family members, and if I were to ask them to tell me a little bit about Navid, what do you imagine they'd say?
Well, I think the most probably marking thing is that I was in Mexico for about 12 years. And so I've always been like the wild card of the family and also friends. I mean, I lived in San Francisco, and then one day I was just like, screw it. And we just left to Guadalajara, Mexico, and moved there. And I lived there for 12 years. And I'm originally from Iran. So I lived in Iran for 12 years, US for 12 years, and then Mexico for 12 years. So just moving around a lot, a little bit of a wild card, kind of trying to find something fun to work on, you know? Huh.
I have to ask, since you've been in these three places equal amount of time, like, yeah, what's your favorite place? Like, what's your favorite country? I know it's funny. These are like three incredibly different countries.
Yeah.
Let alone, like, I assume when you were in the US, you were in San Francisco, you said, so very different.
I was in Philadelphia for 10 years and San Francisco for two.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, my favorite is definitely Mexico, mostly because Iran is not a place we can kind of go back to in a fun way.
Yeah.
Mexico is kind of where my soul is, to be honest with you. It's just like, feels like a fun version of Iran in a way, you know, culturally. It's a lot more closer to where my family's from. And it's just like a lot of fun. You know, I like the sun. I like some freedom. You know, there's just like a lot of places to explore. And yeah, it just feels like the US is like a lot of rules, you know, it's just like a rule for everything. Mexico feels like the opposite in that way. And it's so closed, you know. I don't know. It's just a great place. Yeah, I love Mexico.
And when you say, so were you in Guadalajara that whole time, all 12 years?
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. But we travel around Mexico a lot. So I would say maybe once every 6 weeks or something, we always traveled. And so I got to know a lot of Mexico. And so I just had like a blast there. Yeah, it was so much fun.
Wow. That's that's incredible, man. Well, I'm excited to talk to you. We connected in Sam Parr's short-term rentals Facebook group that he started. And I want to just start this conversation by hearing a little bit about the very first experience you had with Airbnb. Like, where did you go? Where were you staying? And even if it wasn't Airbnb proper, just another short-term rental, what was your very first experience like renting out somebody's home or a room in someone else's home as opposed to a hotel?
So I've been using Airbnb really, really long time. I think the first time I must have used it would have been like, I was a really, really early adopter. I must have been like 2000 and I don't know. I don't know if it was even out 2007 or 8, but I think I used it back then even. Like, I think that if I had to guess, like, it was somewhere in the US. I don't really remember, but the one I do remember, the first one that I actually can remember, was in Mexico.
Okay.
And it was like a gypsy caravan in Ajijic, Mexico. And it was like $50 or $40 a night or something like that. And it was just a great experience. I had been to Ajijic a lot, which is a really cool town, by the way, but it was just such a cool experience. You know, it was just such a small place, but it was in the right part of town, and it was so much fun. So the most memorable one though that I remember really well is that we rented this mansion in the middle of a jungle. It was like a 14 bedroom place, and it was on top of this kind of like hot water springs, and this doctor from LA had built it over 40 years. So he started when he was 28, and he's like in his 70s now or something. And wow. It took him like 5 years just to build the roads. Jeez. To go from the mountain to go all the way down. It was like something like 2,000 acres of land or something that they had to build on top of. It was owned by like the Remingtons or something, the guys that make the guns. And they sold it. And when I saw properties like that, it really inspired me, because it really showed me like how long it really takes to do cool projects, like, you know, like really outlandish stuff that you get there, and you just like, you know, like you get a little bit of that kid feeling, you know, you just like, wow, this is just amazing. And I started to talk to the guy, and I just realized like how long it would take to do something really amazing like that. And that really impacted me a lot. And that was through Airbnb too.
Those are excellent stories, and I have to go check out this mansion. I got to find a way to get there. It sounds incredible.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Yeah.
So Naveed, you're like a serial entrepreneur. You founded an agency that helped to build products for companies like Comcast and eBay and General Mills and LinkedIn. And then you founded a company called Placeit, which was, I think, like a design and mock-up tool of sorts for creatives. And then you ultimately sold that to Envato. And for those who aren't familiar, Envato is one of the leading marketplaces for various creative assets. So selfishly, I do want to ask, like, what does your creative process look like? Like, you've worked on some really, really cool projects, really sort of like diverse projects. So talk me through, like, what are your go-to frameworks or hacks or anything that you do when you need to you know, double down, focus hard, and bring something new to life? Like, how do you go about starting?
I mean, for me, it's just kind of like, I don't know. I just get kind of obsessed with like some set of ideas, and they just kind of like stay in my mind, and then they just don't let go. You know, I have a pretty obsessive like personality with things. And if just like lately, like for a long time, I've been obsessed with tubes, like anything with like tubes. And like I'm doing it, my next company I'm working on is like all about PVC and tube related stuff. And I don't know why, I just get kind of obsessed with it. And then I just can't let it go. It like kind of like consumes me. And so the first company we started was a website builder. It was at the time with Squarespace and all that was coming out. And so I was super into this idea of like making one design decision, and then the rest of the design decisions would be made for you. So like if you changed, let's say you really wanted to change some color of some text, but then that was going to have like five other derivative choices that would have been had to be made if you were a good designer. Instead of having to do all those, the program would do it for you. And I spent all my money building that app, almost went broke doing that. And that's at the same time that we're doing the agency. And the reason why we did place it was to promote Breezy, actually, the app. And so I didn't actually think anything was going to happen with it. And so, and I always liked this idea of like, you know, easy to use design apps. You know, it was always like kind of in there for me. And I don't know, it's really weird because a lot of times you start stuff and you plan it really well, and it goes just like nothing happens, you know. And that's the weird thing, is that the more, I know this doesn't happen for everybody, but for me at least, like, you know, I started when I was like, I started a lot of things before I got out of college, but when I got out of college, I was like really all in, and I still wasn't. Like, the more I would spend to plan things, the more like kind of, you know, meh would come out, you know. It just wouldn't. And what I realized is that you just need a lot of room to play around. You know, like you just need to have this space financially and just kind of mentally and also resource wise, you know, to be able to just play. And that's when the cool stuff starts to come, and you have to really believe in that in a very serious way. And that's a big learning, you know, for me, because the first, like when I almost went broke twice was when it was companies that I had done business plans for and everything. And they, you know, just nothing happened with them. It was just kind of like, you know, and I was like super into, you know, customer development. And there were a lot of books back then that was like Eric Ries and all these different kind of like books on like, you know, customer development process. And I was really like a big fanboy of all that stuff. And for me, it just doesn't work. Like for me, it's all about getting in there and knowing some one or two things and just kind of starting to play. And then as it's going, if you get other really clever people to go with you, you just start to just kind of like make the dish as you go. And that makes it so much more fun. And then you start to figure out some stuff that works and you double down. But yeah, I don't have any luck with like the whole pre-plan thing, and I've grown to like have a huge distaste for it. Like it just seems to be that most of the fun is in this whole like kind of get there and start to play kind of thing. But you definitely need like finances and resources to be able to play three or four times. Sure. You know, and that's a really big deal, because I know plenty of people that like can't do that, you know, because they're like, well, I don't have the chips to play three times, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's a really important thing. If you do have it, you know, you can do some really, really cool stuff. But yeah.
So when you were when you were growing up, were you one of those kids that like if you got a toy or like a Lego set of some sort, would you just like rip open the box and just start like figuring out like how to build shit yourself? Or did you like read the instructions?
My brother. Okay. No, that was definitely my brother. I was more entrepreneur from like really, really early age. Like I was the first thing, like when I was 6, 7, I'm sure you've heard this like kinds of stories all the time, but like I didn't have any money. So I went to the store in front of us in Iran, and I told the guy that I didn't know what interest was, but I knew that I was like, I'll give you 10% more tomorrow if you let me borrow this candy, like get this candy and I'll pay you back 10% more tomorrow. And I doubled my money. And I was like 7 maybe at the time. So I was always into like getting my freedom with money kind of thing, like just letting it. So my brain was always wired more for like business and things like that. Now I went into product and engineering and design and things like that, but more just like curious stuff. I was always just a little bit more about like building the thing rather like an organization or process and things like that. And then as a secondary, like into the like the engineering side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So if, you know, my wife and I have spent the last year living full time on Airbnb, and let the record show that we were doing this before Brian Chesky announced to the world that he's now doing this. And you know, we've had the opportunity to stay in some like really incredible places, but none quite like the place that you have cultivated and are building at. Is it Safa Farms or Safa?
Yeah.
Safa.
Yeah, okay. Safa is the thing. Yeah. It kind of means like wealth, and it means a lot of things in Arabic, but yeah, Safa, you know, but yeah, that's.
And so you guys have built Safa Farms, which is this like super cool, like boutique eco hotel right outside of Guadalajara. So walk me through like the story. Like, how do you go from building digital products to selling Place It to Envato to starting Safa Farms?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just getting like antsy, honestly. I was like, I was the CEO for 2 years. I stayed on Envato and I ran like all the Mexico operations. I grew like the organization quite a bit, and I was just trying to take a break for a little while. I was a little burnt out after working so hard for so long, and I just wanted to take a break. And so I took a break for like 2 months and I started going nuts. I was reading a lot and I was just kind of like not feeling good. I was at the beach and I was just like, this is just not for me. And so I just wanted to do something. I have this obsession with like picking things that give you a lot of learnings in a very short period of time, but are somehow risk protected or don't cost a lot. So the way I think about it is that, like, you know, let's say you go and you build something, you know, and you're not an architect, you're not an engineer, but you want to learn all those things. I mean, if you really want to learn a lot about those things really quickly, you don't have that many choices, you know, and I'm talking about a really compacted period of time. So I wanted to learn them myself, but the problem is that you need permits and things like that. And so the problem with permits is that you have to design kind of what you want to do before you. So that goes back to like what we were talking about, this whole kind of as you go design process. Doesn't work with permits and things like that, because you have to obviously like think about all the stuff beforehand. And I didn't want to do that because I wanted to play with things as I was going. And I'd be like, oh, okay, now that I learned, you know, how to play with stone, you know, now I can do the foundation of the property in a different way. Or now that I know how expensive soil and clay works, I know how to do this part of the project in a different way. And so what I wanted was like, I wanted to go somewhere where no one was going to bug me, you know, in terms of permits, things like that. The second was that I wanted somewhere where the land value was going to be protected, you know, because you can go in the middle of nowhere and buy land really cheap, but it might not be developed for like the next 40 years or something like that. So, you know, that wasn't going to work. And so I wanted something in front of a lake, and land in Mexico actually comparatively is more expensive than it is in the US. When you're talking about, you know, rural things, like you can buy land. Yeah, it's kind of weird, but it's actually pretty expensive. And so most of the lakefront land is bought. So there was this one lake that we found that had the space, and the guy was willing to sell a good bit. It's only 5 acres, really. It's actually not that big, but it's all lakefront. Wow. And it just, I was just like, hey, how do we learn a lot at the same time? And so I hired, you know, there was something like 25 to 30 different people working there at once. And so I was able to get into all these different projects and learn a lot of the lessons really fast. And this was all in a 1 year period. So I was just like, it was more of a, I wanted to learn something different than the tech things, but I wanted to learn it in a really condensed period of time. I didn't want to spend like 5 years learning about the stuff I wanted to. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I mean, talk about sort of like a crash course in design, in hospitality, in architecture, right? Like all in one. Like it's Yeah, I mean, you basically got an MBA on, you know, in this stuff. Yeah. And, you know, hopefully it's an MBA that's actually going to pay off, hopefully in the long run. But talk to us a little bit about the farm itself. So it includes like 6 cabins and a larger like adobe house. And everything about this place was sort of designed with sustainability in mind. So can you just, you know, talk us through a little bit about like where specifically is SAFA located and, you know, what were some of the considerations? Because again, you could have built this in a number of different ways, right? So like how, talk to us a little bit about like, you know, the process that you went through, the playground, so to speak, that you played in and, you know, what tricks of the trade you sort of like learned along the way?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that like, I think it's really a different exercise if you want to build something to make money versus you want to build something that kind of nourishes your soul. So I see a lot of the people in the short-term rental space, like, you know, what they're trying to make for is like trying to get, you know, 12 to 16 or 20% return or something like that. Yeah. Honestly, I wasn't trying to do that. I was just trying to take a bunch of money and build something where, and I'll be honest with you, the reason why I built it is that I thought if I got sick with some sort of disease and I wanted to go somewhere and no one could bug me and I could just be there, and I didn't have to explain to someone what I was feeling or how, what I was processing, where would I want that space to be that would give me that peace? Huh. And that's what I built it for. And then everything else was just like, whatever, you know, because I wanted it to be, I always thought if I build it for that, then other people will feel the same thing. And that worst case, it'll just break even, you know?
Yeah.
That was kind of the thinking process about it. And I thought about like, we used to spend a lot of time at farms. My grandpa had like a villa in Iran and I drew a lot of inspiration from that like the kids were able to run around free. But in like, it was all just our family. Yeah. So the place was just big enough just for the family so that the kids could run around without feeling like there was a stranger there or someone that'd be like, well, I don't want my kids running around. I can't see them. And there is another family staying here. So the design of the space is all, centered around that. It's like the cabins are centering around this massive fire pit that's there, so that, and then the pool is right in front of the huge palapa and the dining area. And so it's like this symmetrical kind of like design that's kind of like pushes you to come together and sit together and do things. And that is like one of my favorite things, because the kids just kind of run around and do whatever. And when the kids are happy and relaxed and doing whatever, the parents are really relaxed. And so it kind of like, you know, we really wanted that experience to be like that, because that's what I felt really peaceful with. And so I designed everything with that as my compass. And so the 6 cabins and the big palapa, it's a massive palapa. It's huge. It's very, very tall. It's like maybe 60 feet tall or something like that. The palapa goes up. Yeah, it's a huge structure. And it's a huge outdoor kitchen, and it's got this 60 feet long pool also. And I built that for my wife so she could, you know, do her laps and things like that.
It looks so incredible, by the way. I was like, from the videos on your website, I was like, the whole place looks absolutely incredible, but I was especially enamored by the pool. And it's not like, you don't see pools that are that long and also narrow, like, right? Like, and the way that you crafted it is so distinct. So anyways, I just had to call that out.
That's funny that you said that, is because actually, that was actually the project that we failed at the most, is that we tried to build make a really sustainable pool with, you know, they call them natural pools, but they're horrible ideas, you know, in concept, they're very cool. But when you get into the chemistry of like bacteria and disease and things like that, they're really not sustainable concepts. So we redid the pool.
Wow.
We did it once one way to make it a natural pool and then realized that it was just like dumb and it just didn't work at scale and had to redo it. But yeah, I mean, most of the decisions in an adobe house, I honestly built it for my wife to be really comfortable there. And so that's why it's like so thick and everything. And, you know, the adobe process, that was like super fun. That's my favorite building technique. Like if I had to build it again, I would have built everything with super adobe, like clay and dirt and all those things are just so much more fun to work with. They're just so, you know, it's just like, it's such a beast of a material. Like you can hit a pickup truck right now to the house, the Adobe house. And I'll promise you that the pickup truck will get dented before the house. You know, you take a sledgehammer right now and hit the wall with it. It just like, it bounces right off of the wall. I mean, it's amazing. That material, you know, that it's so interesting. Like I'm in a house right now, it's made of studs and drywall and everything. If I kick the wall right now, it'll just break.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do to the Adobe house that we have there. That, you know, the beams in the roof are 12 meters to 30 something feet. Beams are made from palm trees. You know, if you know anything about palm trees, like nothing happens to those beams. Yeah. I mean, and you feel that material. You know, I'm not a very like hippie type of person before I did all these things, but it really impacts you when you're in a space that has that kind of really strong material. You feel that when you stay in those kinds of places. And it really impacts you in like this very, very like, you know, substantial way. So this is a very, very profound process. Like when you go through building stuff that's touching different materials, you get to learn a lot about just like nature and earth in this very, very touching way. Like you really learn things in a very, very, it's really hard to explain. Like you feel things. The way you feel about plastic, the way you feel about dirt, the way you feel about cement and metal and stone and water, all that stuff changes. You get like a very different relationship, and they don't become just materials that you just put there and you're trying to get X return. You really look at it in this much more like wholesome way, especially when you're off grid, because, you know, the stuff when you're done with it and when you're on a farm and you have nowhere to go pick up the trash, you get to really understand a lot more about what happens when you choose certain types of materials, you know, like roofing materials and plastics and stuff like that, is that versus like things like dirt, you know, it's just like, it's just a whole different state of mind, you know, when you're constructing in those kinds of materials.
So how do you like learn all this stuff? Cause I mean, you spent, you know, well over a decade, like building all these digital products, and now you're like, you're working with things that are like physical, like real material, right?
So
How did you even start? Did you just hire a bunch of like really great people? Did you do a lot of learning yourself and then sort of dictate, this is how I want this to go, or what?
I hired construction workers. So they didn't know anything about these kinds of building techniques. So we were, you know, I was just kind of learning with them while we were doing it. And I was using a lot of the techniques that we did when we were building digital things, which is just to try stuff on a smaller scale and just kind of leave the time to put it in nature. You know, like for example, if you're going to do a specific mix of dirt and limestone and a little bit of cement or something like that, you make that as a brick and then you put it, you know, under a lot of pressure outside and you see how it reacts for a month or two before you build with it. So it was just like doing a lot of those tests. It's really painful because some of the stuff, you know, you're really introducing new things to people, but, you know, probably 50% of it, you know, there's somebody out there that knows how to do something, but that's just no fun.
Yeah.
You know, they're just like, it's just they're robbing you of probably the most beautiful part of this whole thing, which is that you're trying to discover something, you know, and play and be kind of like a curious person and do that. And I mean, we had some serious problems there in terms of water, for example. Like we had salt water, which is, you know, a huge problem on a farm, obviously. Salt water kills everything. We had salt water for two wells that we did on the farm. And wells are extremely expensive to do. And so if you don't have access to fresh water, all your plants will die. And so I had to design a new way of being able to measure salt water as we were drilling the well, which was like not a thing that anybody around us knew, and something that we created from scratch. And so there were some of those things that were like really cool that we were able to do. Some of the stuff was knowledge that if we were in the US, especially in like Arizona, Southern California, we probably could have gotten, but it would have been super expensive to bring those kinds of people down. So we were saying, you know what, worst case scenario, because these structures were all separate and nothing two story, nothing crazy. You know, the worst case scenario is that the wall would have cracked, you know, like if you would have used a little bit of a mix that was a little bit wrong. And so you think like worst case scenario, you know, is just not that bad. So you say, well, screw it. Let me play with it myself. And I'm not putting anyone in danger.
Sure.
Because, you know, these are really big walls, really thick things, and there's nothing on top of anything. And so we took like very specific risks where we're like, okay, worst case scenario, the pool will crack a little bit if we try it, this other technique, and we'll see it and then we'll fix that. Or worst case, the wall, we just kind of crack a tiny bit and we'll understand how that works. Or with the fire pit, like worst case, you know, we'll get a little bit of water, you know, in the bottom during the rainy season, but that's not the worst thing in the world. Yeah. Whereas in the US, you can't really do stuff like that with codes and things like that. You just can't play.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's no play. You know, it's like they tell you such specific, you know, through all the restrictions, they put you so many restrictions that I just don't find interesting.
Yeah.
You know, any of the building process. I don't get it. Like, why would you, you know, it's just like, it's such become such a business exercise that it just sucks all the fun out of it. You know, you might as well do something in the digital world at that point, you know, because you're just like, well, you know, you just can't play in a, I don't know. For me, that's not play. It just becomes like a cost reduction exercise, you know?
Oh, that's so boring. That's so good. So you keep talking about, you know, you keep using words like play and fun, and that's clearly sort of like baked into the overarching experience that you guys have designed at Safa. And can you just like tell us a little bit about the way that you thought about crafting the whole experience? Because it's, you know, so much more than just a place to stay. You guys have like food and activities, and all this is sort of like included as part of this experience that you guys have cultivated for your guests. So talk us through a little bit about like your intention when people come there, and then when guests leave, like what are you hoping they experience while being there? And then what are you hoping that they're like, you know, takeaways from experiencing this very, very unique and special place might be?
Yeah, it's, to be honest, it's really a hippie thing to say, but honestly, I wouldn't consider myself, maybe 2-3 years ago, I would be saying words like this, but honestly, for me, it's about like going with your friends and family and just feeling like their love, and feeling it in this like, in this, and you know, like, so you might say, well, what do you mean? I mean, the thing is that there's just so many distractions that we have every day, even in these Airbnbs where it's just like there's too much setup with the TVs and internet, all the different, it's like the space breeds a certain type of activity, you know? So if you sit on a train, for example, you notice that you kind of act in a different way. In a plane, you act in a different way. In church or whatever you might go, you go into different states of mind. And so, for example, the cabins are just big enough for you to sleep. Okay. And so what we have a space outside, directly outside of your cabin where you can sit. Okay. But it's not, and it's really careful the way I did it is because I don't want people to go and sit by themselves in a space. And so you can still be separate from everybody else and sit outside your porch and read or something, but you're not so much where you're just like going off and doing, you know, I don't know, sitting inside to watch TV or something like that.
Yeah.
And then you're all the time, it's like the circular design. So you all the time see everybody else. And, you know, there's this peace that you get. There's tons of bird migrations there the whole day. So you constantly are watching nature be peaceful, and it constantly snaps you out of, you know, your own phone, mental state, whatever you want to call it. So if you're searching for that just a little bit, you know, you're trying to just kind of snap out of some cycle of thinking or being or whatever, and you want to be more present, it's very easy to do that there because the nature is just so strong. It gets pretty warm during the day, you know, and you feel the heat and like all the physical essences, the experiences you feel in this very serious way. In the morning, it's like very brisk and you hear tons of ducks and birds and things like that going, you hear wolves. It's just like your senses are kind of like, if you've, you know, drugs and things can do similar things, but it's like all your senses are very amplified, you know, in terms of nature.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to just kind of like fall into a different state, you know, where you just like your body and your mind is a lot more paying attention to those things because they're a lot more loud because you don't control those environments. There's no AC, you know, the food is what food is there, you know, and then this idea of scarcity a little bit that you have to work with the other people that are there. So there's no food. You can't have food inside your cabin or anything. So when you want to have food, you go into the general space, which is where your family and friends are going to be. So you just, it just constantly kind of breeds this like social behavior, you know, that gets you kind of in this positive state, assuming you like the people that you, you know, take time with. And, and this nature kind of therapy that, you know, we all need. And it's just kind of there to just give you in this really nice and calm state. But
yeah.
In this kind of pace where you take your pace, because there's not like, okay, from, and we get a lot of people like this. It's like, what are the activities, you know, from, and a lot of Americans that come down to Mexico like this kind of things, like from 12 to 2, you're doing, you know, bungee jumping or something. And from 2 to 4, you're doing like Mexican cooking and blah. And people ask me this stuff, but we don't do that. You know, kayaks are there. If you want to go and kayak, you can go on the kayak whenever you want. If you want to go fishing, you can go fishing whenever you want. There's two giant mountains around. If you like hiking, we can go hike, but we don't. I just don't like this whole kind of even in vacation, creating stress for yourself no reason whatsoever. And there's a lot of people that bring that tension with themselves in these places, and you can feel it in this very loud way because the place is so peaceful. You know, people are like, well, what are we doing? It's like, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you want to do that, you can go do that. If you don't want to do that. So what I hope, and what I see from a lot of the Airbnb comments, is they always tell me that they felt a peace that they haven't felt in a really long time. It's the most common like review that I get. And that makes my heart like so happy that we're just able to be a place where people are able to fall into like a state that's a little bit different than what they're normally used to.
What's so interesting is it sounds like when people think about vacations or getaways, I feel like, especially in the US, right? It's exactly what you described. We want to go to some, you know, a little bit more of a remote or unique or sort of like this like bespoke location in another country. And we want to experience what it's like to be a local, but we also want our routines. We're like, we want our structures.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like, you know, when you go to SAFA, the experience that you all have designed, like you're forced, you are submitting to the environment. Like you are submitting to sort of this experience, almost like you're deferring, like this is this, you know, you need to respect the rhythm of this place, like of this space, and that's what you're signing up for, right? Like
100%. It's because the nearest town, the nearest like place to even get food is 20 minutes away. So the food is what we have there, you know, the temperature is what it is, you know. And so I don't know. I think that, it's exactly what you described. And for people that let go, I actually, like, my dad came down as a pretty tense person. The first 2 days, he was a little tense. And then finally, day three, I saw him just, like, falling asleep on the hammock between, you know, when it was hot, between, like, 1 to 3. And then, you know, when the sun was a little bit more light, he was getting out there and he wanted to work on the farm. You know, we have a coconut farm on the farm. And so he was working there. And then when he would get tired, he would sit there and he watched the sunset. And it's exactly what you were saying, is that at first you're just like trying to fight and say, like, this is my thing. And they bring their Kindles and their whatever, and they're just trying to like read the 20 pages they were trying to read and all these things. And then you see this thing, if they stay long enough, happen, which is like the body just starts to kind of like tell you, hey, no. And it's so cool to watch this thing when the sun goes down and the air gets cool, and you don't have any AC, you naturally just feel sleepy. And the second most common comment that I get is people telling me they sleep super well there.
Wow.
And you know, there's all this work on, you know, melatonin and everything around, you know, when it gets darker and the environment's cooler. And, you know, out there, that's exactly what happened. It gets dark and then you were exposed to tons of bright light during the day. So your body just like completely shuts down. And in the rooms, there isn't that much light, you know, there's just like a small light and it's like a 5 watt, like, you know, LED light. So you just can't expose yourself to that much light. I mean, I guess you could take your phone and blast it in front of your face, but most people just kind of like become calm and they go into this deep, deep sleep. And I just love that. I think it's just like, it's such a cool thing for people to be able to just like escape, have this second where you're able to escape your current routine and see something a tad bit different and understand maybe what's the plus or minuses of either, and be able to just kind of like have that catharsis, you know, just like being able to just kind of like really experience that. It's really helpful because it helps you to be still a little bit more,
yeah,
be a little bit more present, you know, because you start to realize how not present you are because you see the contrast so obviously, because there's just not that much to do there, you know. You're just kind of sitting there and the sun, you know, the sunsets are just so gorgeous. You're just staring at the sunset for like an hour and a half and you realize it's just like, I can't do that at home, you know. I just have to put on the TV for, you know, hour and a half. Nobody sits there inside. And so, you know, environment definitely affects behavior in this very serious way. And so we're hoping that the environment there gives people that this kind of peace that is really hard to achieve in like modern life today.
Yeah. So well said. Got a few final questions for you. First and foremost, when you think about like this project, right? What has been the most rewarding aspect of bringing like Sappho to life? And then what has been the hardest aspect? And maybe, you know, the hardest aspect has also been, you know, the most rewarding, but if you can tease that out a little bit, like what has been most fun, what has been most interesting and engaging and helpful, and then what has been just like, what's challenged you, what's kept you up at night when you think about sort of bringing this project to life?
Yeah, I mean, for all the hippie speak, like honestly my background is more finance, you know, and so I'm really like I don't know, in terms of return on my money, I'm actually pretty strict. And so it's been the only financial exercise that I've ever done that, you know, has forced me to kind of think of something that's not for growing my money. And that's been really hard for me because it's a substantial sum that I spent on the project. And there's no financing or anything in Mexico. It's like they all went out of cash. And so, and it breaks even because I have to pay a family that runs the farm and stays on the farm and takes care of the coconuts and everything else that's on there. So that's been the hardest because I can't really justify. And now we're in LA, you know, I can't be there full time. Well, we go back there really, really often, like once every 6 weeks or so, but I'm not there all the time. And so that's really hard for me to like think about it like that, because I usually don't. And the hardest challenge of water, you know, if anyone's like listening that wants to do an off-grid farm, like understanding how to do wells and water quality is a very complicated topic, super risky. And so that's where I lost the biggest amount of money. And I understood the least. And so if somebody wants to reach out and ask me about that stuff, happy to help. But that was the hardest by far. The rest of the stuff, honestly, difficulty was like maybe a third or fourth of that complexity. And then the funnest thing, like in the most interesting thing about the whole project is just kind of that you're letting your curiosity run, you know, and you're able to just kind of like chase your ideas and learn. And for me, it's like that is that we just kind of like the funnest parts of life for me is building things that I'm curious about. And it allowed me to do that. You know, it allowed me to play and just kind of build stuff as I was thinking about it. And, you know, that's been really, really rewarding. It made me realize that we have it really good in the digital world, you know, in terms of margins and things like that. You know, the people in the that build things in the physical world, I think, are dealing with different things. And it made me really realize, you know, materials and a lot of the old materials that we used to use, the sturdiness and the timelessness of them is something that had a huge impact on me, you know, now, especially being in the US and seeing these houses with, you know, a bunch of matchsticks and, you know, drywall and everything compared to a lot of stone, you know, and 70 centimeter, you know, thick walls and things like that. It really made me just appreciate like things in a very different way in terms of how we think about the spaces that we live in. And so I think those experiences are really cool to have, you know, to be able to go and build something with your hands, especially if you dealt with a digital world. It gives you that contrast so you can understand it. And yeah, most importantly, nature, you know, it just gives you like this whole other view on like what happens, the life cycle of things in general, you know, because on an off-grid farm, there's no place to put trash, you know, so you come with the other mentality and, you know, you bring plastic and there's nothing you can do with it. You bring, you know, organic trash, and then you realize, you know, that's actually really useful. You know, you have cow manure and all these things, and that's all very useful. So you start to like really understand how abstracted we've become from all these systems, you know, that exist. And you just like, there's no, like all these systems you just are so disconnected from. And that's the thing that I love most about the farm, is that you could take a long shower and the water that, you know, you don't end up using ends up going back into the ground and making it back into the aquifer. And so, whereas when you're, you know, in a hotel or something in California or whatever, it constantly says save water. And honestly, that makes no sense anyways, because they clean the water and they bring it back. But you're just so disconnected from all these different ideas. You don't even know what to think anymore. Like, what's happening? Is you recycle? What's going on? And when you have like an off-grid farm kind of setup, and it's kind of like a closed loop, what you end up creating that's wasteful, you see very visibly in your face. So the reaction loop is like, the reaction is so obvious. Like you see it right there, and you're like, I have to stop bringing those to the farm because I have nowhere to put them. And then the organic stuff, good stuff grows from it, and you're like, that's okay. And so it's very direct, you know, and you understand this in this very, very like deep way. And I've been really, really grateful to the whole process for that, because I don't think I would have ever understood it any other way.
So when you think about the future and you think about sort of like, you know, Saffa Farms and what the next 2 to 3 years looks like, is the plan to build, you know, more cabins? Is it, have you maxed out space? Like, what's the 2 to 3-ish year plan for Saffa? And then would you ever build something akin to Saffa Farms anywhere else?
Yeah. So we're thinking about possibly doing a project similar to Saffa Farms, but doing it for dementia and Alzheimer's patients in Mexico.
Wow.
Because the care is really, really poor in the US right now, and the cost is really high. And there's more and more people, obviously the baby boomers, you know, there's going to be 1 in every 3 are going to come down with one of the two, and they're going to need memory care. There's been these very, very cool models of like these closed villages basically created, like this idea of having a community where you can kind of run around and have your dignity, you know, get coffee, go to the store, do stuff, but you can't go outside, but it's a big community.
Yeah.
So you can hang out with your friends and things like that. So the model is pretty popular. You can look it up, but they've done like 60, 70 places around the world like that, but we don't have any of them, I don't think, actually in the US yet, and neither in Mexico. And so the idea, so we have this idea, I'm trying to kind of think about if I have the bandwidth to do the project, but it's something that I'm really interested in, because, you know, it's just such a like rewarding project, you know, to build something like that. At the farm, I don't think we're going to do too much more in terms of building cabins and everything, because like I said, it's just for your family.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's for like 15 people. And bringing more people there would just kind of make it weird, you know. My plan is to keep it like that, and hope that, you know, people go there and just have a good time, and they just like just feel a little bit better than they did before they arrived. And as long as it does that, even if it loses money, I don't really care. I think it's okay, and that's a good thing. As long as that keeps happening. But yeah, I love that everything that I learned from a construction perspective, especially building with Adobe and just like faster construction methods that use like a lot of the materials that are around. I love that. And I'm, you know, working with some people to possibly do that in Mexico, but still early phases. I'm not really big on like the hospitality as a money-making component. I see, you know, in Mexico, a lot of the problem, like for the local, is that, you know, during the week, you don't have it occupied. And so the math kind of works, you know, but you need to be in like beach towns or something like that to get that during the middle of the week booked as well, or for longer term stays.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, but like, I still look at the digital world as just way more, like if the exercise is that as a business exercise, I think the digital world is way better, especially for people that have digital skills. It's just way better at, you know, multiplying things, you know, in binary, you know, and it's just better at that, you know, inherently digital world. So if it becomes like a soul fulfilling exercise, I think for someone like me, it's really cool because you can find the value in it from that angle and you can see where you can do something that's a little bit different. But to be honest with you, like after doing the project, you know, we're building another couple of properties like in Mexico by the beach and everything, and they're just kind of much more pure finance kind of thing. And I think at that point, it's just better to just buy stuff, you know, because you know, it's just like I said before, it's just like a cost reduction exercise. It's not really like, and some people may get upset at that, but I really think about it like that. It's not really, you're not really, I don't know, designing. It's kind of just a slight configuration of something else, you know. It's just like a box, and you just kind of put the wall over there instead of here, and the window's a little bit bigger or something, you know. It just looks to me, it's somebody else can do that, and you know, if they really love that, then good for them, you know. But this whole thing where you can be like, what if, and you totally just kind of get to play, that's where the fun is. I think that's where you're like, wow, this is really, really fun. And even if I lose 10-15% of my money, you know, I had a blast and this was just like so much fun. And then the other stuff, I think it's just like modular, prefab, whatever, you know, just do that. Because really, like, my decision on this thing being a little bit different, it just doesn't have that much impact on the final experience anyway, because it's very minor, you know. The person looks at it as a container house, as a container house, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's not that different one versus another one. It's a little different, but like, really, not that different, you know what I mean?
And I think, I was just gonna say, I love how much of like a purist you are when it comes to this. Like, you think very like categorically, you know, different than I think a lot of people in this space think. And I think you know, the more that you talk, the more convinced I am that, oh wow, yeah, that's a really interesting thing. Like, either go and do something genuinely different and be okay with potentially, you know, it not being sort of this beautiful, like profitable sort of like venture and enterprise, or just, you know, do the prefab thing and be okay with it. And like, don't pretend it's something, you know, other than that. Like, don't try to make it something other than what it, you know, actually is, which is a container home that you could find pretty much anywhere else. So I like that you're sort of like a pretty, like, you have pretty like polarizing beliefs in terms of like approach, which I think is distinct and unique.
I saw a lot of that and I was just like, I don't really get it, you know, like, because you're not learning that. I mean, you think about it, like, we just have, you know, X amount of years, you know, you have X amount of experiences. It's just like, if you can't extract that much fun from the experience, you know, like, I don't know. Just,
Well, Naveed, this has been a blast. I really appreciate, first and foremost, just what you've built. It looks unbelievable. And for folks who are tuning in, we'll have links to Saffa Farms below, their website, their Instagram, their Airbnb listing. You can check it out. I just want to, you know, thank you for taking the time and, you know, pouring in a fair amount of, you know, money, I'm sure, to bring something like this to life. It looks fantastic. I can't wait to get down there one day. For folks that want to, you know, just learn a little bit more about your philosophy, learn a little bit more about sort of, you know, maybe something technical, a technical question about how you built your wells, whatever it might be, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
Twitter, I would say. Yeah, I'll respond. Naveed Saffa, NAVIDSAFA. On there, you can ask me anything. Yeah, I would be more than happy to share with you whatever you want to know.
Awesome. Sweet. And we'll link your Twitter as well, so you can find Naveed's handle below. All right, man. Thank you so much for your time. This was fun.
All right, man. Later.
Hey friends, hope you've enjoyed today's show. If you are an Airbnb host or know an Airbnb host who'd like to come on the show, please send me an email at zach@spontaneous.com and we will chat. Behind the Stays is brought to you each week by Spontaneous, a carefully curated weekly newsletter that brings you the best last-minute deals and upcoming steals on Airbnb. It's sort of like Scott's Cheap Flights, but for Airbnb. You can sign up once again for free at spontaneous.com. Last but certainly not least, I didn't believe in Marie Kondo's whole spark joy mantra until I started podcasting. Now, my joy is sparked every time I see a new subscriber roll in. So please hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode and so you add a little spark to my joy fire today. Okay, that was kind of weird, but we're going to roll with it. Subscribe and thanks in advance. All right, everyone. See you next time.